Welcome back to the In the Woods podcast, the show dedicated to your strange and eerie encounters in the outdoors. Today's episode features Autumn's story and a lonely hike in the woods that they almost never came back from. This is In the Woods, the show all about the mysterious and terrifying things that happen beyond the tree line. I'm Eric, the new host of In the Woods, at the request of Darkness Prevails. As always, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. For a link to our Discord and where you can be interviewed for a future episode, and to discover more horror podcasts, go to eeriecast.com. I'm accompanied by Autumn, who will be sharing their story and give us a little insight on what happened that day. All right, Autumn, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, growing up, I always lived out in the woods, and I rarely had ever lived in a very, like, neighborhood area. So I'm always used to the woods, the kind of ominousness of it as it gets darker out, you know, the noises, different kind of creepy things that happen. So, you know, I've always had an interest in, like, cryptids and things that lurk around in the dark. And, you know, growing up on that horse ranch with my grandma really, like, got into that because I always was around the woods. I always would hear the creepy little stories, and, you know, I've always liked that genre of story because I could relate to it living out in the woods.
Were there any local stories that people would tell you growing up that, you know, it was just something maybe local to the area and they would go over?
Well, my grandma always told me the typical story about don't go too far from home because there's a monster out there, and I never really believed her. But there was a couple of instances of hunters every so often whenever they'd go out, especially in the fall to winter months, going deer hunting and turkey hunting. They would hear, you know, strange noises sometimes, or they would feel like a sense of dread or like a deep sadness whenever they were in their perch or, you know, sitting around waiting for an animal to pass them by. But other than that, it's been pretty quiet in my area.
All right. So I guess going on with today's story, what can you give us a little description of, like, the scene, like your family's house and everything, the setup, and then, you know, time of day, everything like that?
Absolutely. So my grandma, whenever she got with my grandpa, he owned a construction company, and they decided to build this really beautiful A-frame house on top of this hill. And, you know, they built it from ground up all, you know, they put a lot of money into it. It's a really beautiful home. And they have a lot of land on this, in this home. And they have like I think it's like about 4 to 5 acre lawn on top of this hill that's just their area. And then there's a gate behind the house that leads down a pretty steep hill, and it goes on to an even bigger field, and it's about maybe between 10 to 15 acres of land down there. And my grandma really liked horses, so she would always have horses down there. And she also had, like, at one point cows, but as I grew up, she kind of got rid of the animals and just kept the land. The way that the field is kind of laid out is, if you're up on the hill and you're looking straight down, there's a tree line that runs across the right side, and then there's a road that runs across the left side. And on the right side, where the tree line is, about 10 feet from there is a creek that runs along the side of that fence all the way down through the area, through people's yards, under, you know, underground at some points, and
like then a little bit further up. They would use it to water their farmlands, stuff like that?
My grandma actually has a connection, like the well water is connected to that creek.
Okay, yeah. Like they have, like, is it kind of like the ones where they have the, there's a water master and they take turns, who's using water for that day, and then they open their gate, I guess. Something like that, or is it more like a wild creek, and they just have split offs where they can get water from it?
It's sort of it's a wild creek, but if you go way further up the creek, there is a spot where there it limits how much water is because it's connected right to the river.
Oh, I
And
see.
sometimes when it floods really bad in the river, it can we have a dam that's further up, like a couple miles up the road from where it's at. And it keeps it from flooding really bad.
Okay. All right. I think that helps really paint a picture of kind of everything. And yeah. What time of day did you say this was when this happened?
It's really hard telling because it happened when I was like around 8 years old, but I think the time of day was around like 6 to 7 in that general area. It also happened in like the fall time, so it got darker a lot faster.
Yeah, so, well, you'd say, yeah, so it's generally dark outside already at this point, right? Or it's getting there. Maybe the lights are starting to kind of go out and,
Yeah, it was getting there. It's kind of like whenever you're outside in the fall and you realize just how dark it got and you didn't even notice it. I could also add that there's a bridge that o goes over the creek that I regularly visited.
Okay, yeah, give us some insight about that bridge as well. Or just anything general to the story that might be some keynotes that you think people would find interesting, or
Yeah,
even stories that people had told you around there, if you have anything like that.
of course. So the bridge, it there's like an old one, almost one lane back road that kind of goes up toward around the side of the hill. And that bridge originally, it was lower to the ground, like really low, but it kept flooding over that area. So they had to build the bridge up a lot higher. And I, whenever they built that bridge up, I spent a lot of my time under the bridge, kind of just doing whatever. It was like the one area that I could go to. And, I spent time down there all the time, finding rocks. Doing whatever I could. Then on the hill where my grandma's house is situated, it kind of slants down towards where the shed is and across the driveway. And about 20 to 25 feet from where the driveway is, there's a cliff, like a bluff. It's about 15 feet tall and it varies in size all the way down it. But it's like this huge cliff that goes across and leads down into the creek and to the bridge.
All right, and then can you tell us the I guess let's get into the story here, exactly what happened. Do you from the beginning, I guess, what led you to that point? What were you in school at the time? Was it summer? You said it's fall, right? So
For
I know
me, it
school
was,
systems are always
yeah,
different.
it was around the fall time. Yeah, for me it wasn't about in the fall time. I think it was I'm pretty sure I went to school that day, but I was already off of school and it was getting later. And I had decided to go down to the creek with my dog. I brought my dog with me and he kind of just going around and because especially where I lived at, there we didn't have internet at that time. We had no internet. I didn't have a phone or a tablet or a laptop. I had nothing. So I had to find different ways to entertain myself, and one of them was always going down to the bridge or walking down the creek. Well, I got a little bit curious and I wanted to walk further down the creek to an area I'd never seen before because I only traveled up the creek so far. I decided I was going to go ahead and go. And at that time, it was like the time that I left from the house, it was right when I got out of school, so about like 3 to 4 o'clock. And I just went down to the bridge, hung out there for a little bit. Then I went down, not really paying attention to the time. And, I just walked a good distance, probably about like a mile or so. down the creek, just kind of looking at all the different stuff I've not seen before, kind of just, you know, finding random stuff that washed up on the creek. So I took my time going down the creek. I didn't just run down and come back up. I actually stopped in certain places, played with minnows, tried to catch frogs, kind of just doing whatever a kid would do.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, how old you are. I'm 27, so, you know, around when I was 8, this is still like before phones, and, you know, phones are around, obviously, but just no smartphones. Mm-hmm. Those didn't come out until I was like, I think I was like 15, and it was iPad first, iPod came out, and I was like, you know, everyone was losing their minds. But yeah, I remember just being a kid, same thing, you know, go out in the woods and you just make your own fun. And
I didn't have, like, I had friends going to school, but I didn't have any that lived near this area, because, like, the people that lived out there, it's a very rural, I can't really say that word, but it's a very rural area, and your nearest neighbor will be, like, at least a mile or two from you. Like, that's the least. And, you know, when you're spaced out so much, you don't really interact with other kids, so I kind of just had to really, really get creative with how I would entertain myself. And a lot of times it was with my dog. Like, I'd always go on adventures with my dog and kind of just explore the creek, have fun any way I really could. And that's one of the ways I figured I could have fun was, oh, let's go explore a new area. You know, maybe we might find something that we never seen before, or maybe we'll find a new spot to swim at or play at, whatever it was.
You never felt uneasy or, you know, being so young and alone out there?
I think part of the reason why I didn't feel that way was because I had grown up around it. I had been around it for so long. And, you know, I've at the time I went hunting with my grandpa. We went duck hunting, deer hunting, turkey hunting. So I spent a lot of time out in the woods, and I up until that point, I had never really felt an uneasiness from being out there. I did, however, feel kind of off whenever I would go to sleep, because it being a rural area, the coyotes would come up into the yard and walk around and right outside my window to the left of my bed was like a rock bed, and you could hear them like pitter pattering on the rocks. You could hear the rocks moving, and you could hear them like yelp and make all their little noises. And it was creepy to me as a kid because they were just out there, even though I knew that they wouldn't attack me or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they can definitely attack though. There's been plenty of coyote attacks there. Typically they don't, but it's, you know, it's recorded, so. You know, but as a kid, I think we don't really think about that. We just think like, oh, look, it's a big dog. But, you know, my thing, I lived in the woods, and they told me, like, watch out for bobcats, like, because people were always getting attacked by bobcats in the woods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. We used to hear stories about people hearing bobcats while they were hunting. Like, me and my grandpa would always hear stories about people saying it's, like, the craziest, creepiest thing they've ever heard, hearing a bobcat scream.
Yeah, it sounds like an old lady screaming. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Even I heard that at night, and I wasn't as freaked out as hearing those coyotes right outside my window. Another thing was, there was this giant window behind my bed that, like, stretched the size of my bed, and it was under a, like, porch kind of deck thing, and they would sometimes go under there, and it creeped me out because, you know, you're laying in bed and it's like they're right behind you. You know, you can hear them pittering and making all their noises. And it scared me that they would get that close, but deer got that close. Wild animals all the time would come up in the yard. So, but the coyotes creeped me out the most.
Yeah. Was it fenced in at all, or was it open?
The only part of it that was fenced in was the, ranch, like the actual field.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
going that downhill sense. That was the rest of it was open because I mean, my grandma made a natural privacy fence of like pine trees up near the road. So you would get like that, even though it was up on a hill, you really couldn't see in the yard anyway.
Yeah, it was just secluded. It was behind the tree line. Didn't really see anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, can you tell us the story about what had followed you home?
Okay. So like I said earlier, it was, I had wandered down to the creek and I had gotten pretty far. I got to an area that I hadn't recognized, but I knew that if I just went back the other way, I'd end up where I to an area I recognized. The furthest I've ever been down this creek was past the point where the gate leads from the field into the creek, and it's like a little dirt, like a little 10-foot long dirt road that goes from the gate to the actual creek bed. And that's the farthest I've ever been, because me and my grandma would always go down there and like hunt for crawdads, or go down there and look for creek rocks to decorate stuff. But I had decided to go past that and go further down. And like I said, I kind of just messed around, hit rocks with sticks, did whatever. So I took my time going down there and really let the sun set. And I end up in this area where it's really, because where I was originally, you could still see the field through the tree line. It was just really hard to. I had already gotten to a point where I was out of the field and I was surrounded by trees. Like it was just trees all around me. Couldn't see the road, couldn't see houses, nothing. And once I got there, I was just in this like little pool area messing around with rocks, and my dog was kind of wandering about doing her business. And all of a sudden, she starts aggressively growling. Now, I am going to point out that my dog, she was a black lab, and she was, how labs are known for being really sweet animals. I have never in my life heard her growl like that. Like that was, it was a very aggressive sounding growl that had even scared me, because I had never heard her make that noise before. So I immediately knew something was up because she was growling very aggressively. And like before, I've heard her, bark at animals. I've heard her, do her normal stuff, but this was something different. And I sat up from the creek and I was looking around. I was asking her, like telling her, like, "Hey, what's up, girl? Like, what's going on?" And she just kept looking at the tree line right behind me from where I was messing with the rocks. And she just is growling and sometimes would bark at it. And all of a sudden, I hear like what I can only describe as, it sounds like a mixture between a growl from a raccoon and the cough of a like 90-year smoker, like a very intense coughing, growling, gurgling noise that I still to this day have no explanation as to what could have made that noise and how a noise could, like, I'm sure it was probably painful for the creature to make that noise, because it, you could just hear it, it just was like really guttural, really, it sounded like they just had smoke in their lungs, and it was just constantly billowing out into like a growling, gnarling sound. So whenever that happened, that's when I was like, yeah, I'm not going to stick around to find out what that noise is. So I decide, okay, I'm going to go, but I'm not going to, like, if, because I, thinking it's an animal, I'm not going to get up and run because it's going to run after me. So I slowly stand up. I think I grabbed like a stick, and I was walking back, trying to walk fairly slow so I wouldn't provoke it. And my dog just stayed growling and barking at it. And I kept telling her, like, let's go. And as I get further up the creek. I'm just walking slowly.
Now, a message from our sponsors.
Before this, I tried to avoid going through the deep spots, so I would go up in the woods around and find another clear area to walk. I didn't do that this time. I got in the water, and since it was about close to winter time, the water was freezing, and at some points it went up to my waist in depth. But I did not want to go in those woods because I didn't want to, you know, be around that thing. And I get a little further ways up, and I can hear it, like, moving in the woods. I can hear, like, little leaves crunching, sticks crunching, you know, just noises of it moving. And as I get further up the creek, I'm about, you know, 1/4 of the way back. I start hearing, like, rustling, like, intense running around all in the woods to my right. And that's when I decide that I'm just going to book it. And I, at this point, I don't know where my dog is. I had already walked far enough for me to not even see her anymore. And it was getting very dark. And since she's a black lab, I couldn't see her anyway, even if she was standing like 5 feet away from me. It was about a little past sunset, and it was getting very, very dark fast. And I just remember running through the water. I remember tripping on rocks, sticks. I had cuts all over me, even though I was wearing a hoodie and jeans. I ran for what felt like forever, and I eventually made it to the clearing that goes from the creek into the field through that gate. And by this point, whatever it was in the woods had still been following me to that side. And in order for me to get to the field and up to my house, I had to run through that little outcropping, which was on my right side. So this is only like a 10-foot span, but if you think about it, like a, you know, an 8-year-old kid, I was a small 8-year-old kid, and I wasn't very athletic at the time, so I had to stop and really think about if I wanted to go here or if I wanted to run up to the bridge and go up through the road. If I had went up through the road, it would have taken me longer to get back home if I hadn't just went through the, you know, outcropping and up into the field and out. So I decided I'm just going to book it. And as I did that, I could hear it, you know, skittering and approaching from my right. And I just ran as hard as I could. That's probably the fastest I've ever run in my life, going through that little dirt road. There's trees surrounding both sides, out into the field as this thing's getting closer and closer to my right. Then I eventually get out onto the field, and at this point, it stopped following me. Whatever it was, it had given up. And I run up the hill, which this hill is almost a 45-degree angle. It's a huge hill going straight up, and it, you know, it's a lot to try to run up it. So I was almost crawling up the hill to get away from whatever it was in those woods. And I finally get to the gate. I run around the house and I go inside and I talk to my grandma. I get yelled at for being that far down the creek, but at that point I didn't care. I just wanted to be in the house and away from whatever it was out there. And when I eventually told her about it, she didn't really like try to be like, oh, that's not, you know, that's not real, or you might have just saw another animal. She just told me to never ever go that far down the creek again, and that like I could have died, that, you know, that was very dangerous. I just got a really stern talking to. Then that's when, you know, the pain set in. I took my hoodie off and I had cuts and scratches all on my arms. My hands were cut up. My legs were bruised from falling in the creek, falling on rocks, and my legs hurt really bad. They were muscle aches everywhere. My back hurt. That's when the pain set in. But what hurt even more was I didn't know where my dog was. My dog was the last time I had saw her was a mile down that creek with whatever it was in those woods, and she hadn't followed me home. I go outside and I'm calling for her, and I just cannot find her. Like, I'm looking everywhere. I'm looking in her bed, in the shed where she liked to sleep at. I'm looking everywhere trying to look for my dog. And as far as I know, I don't know what time she came home, even if she did come home at night, because I woke up the next morning and there she was in her bed. She had no scratches, no damage to her, but I was just happy to really see her. I was really happy to see her because I had thought I lost my dog to whatever animal, creature, thing was in the woods. So I don't know what happened to her, but she came back unscathed. And from that day on, I never went that far down to the creek. I never went past. I went past the outcropping a couple of times, but I never went as far as I did as a kid. And now every time I go to the creek, I bring a knife with me or some other kind of protection because I'm not gonna get caught out there again, unprepared, not ready to fight whatever this thing is. And as far as I can remember, even as a kid, I didn't go down to the creek a lot after that. I did with other people, but I very, very rarely ever went there. And after that happened, the coyotes that were outside my window didn't frighten me as much. It didn't scare me nearly as much as whatever that was in the woods that was making that horrific coughing, wheezing, growling noise and chasing me for the mile that it took me to get back up to my grandma's house.
Yeah, that's crazy. I can only imagine, even running at full speed at that age. I mean, like a 10-minute mile is pretty impressive for most people, and or at least I mean, like a 10-minute mile. So I imagine just 10 minutes of you just absolutely booking it, and just getting, cut up here, and that's terrifying. And
Yeah, and
all that
like I said,
adrenaline.
it was during the fall and it was really cold. Like it I was wearing a jacket and I was running through water that was waist high. So I got home wet, I was freezing, but in my kid brain and even now I didn't care about any of that. I just needed to get as far away from whatever it was that was chasing me as possible.
What do you think it might have been?
I still ask myself that. I've looked up different animal calls because at first, me being a kid, I wanted to figure out what it was. I didn't want to believe that it was some kind of monster or some kind of, creature that I couldn't understand. So I tried looking up different calls of animals, different ways that they acted. I even thought at one point that it might have been a rabid animal. And I was just very lucky to not have gotten attacked or, by it. But the more and more I've looked around, the less I can explain what it was, other than, something that is almost otherworldly. Like, I can't find any animals in this area that would even closely make a noise as horrific as whatever that thing was making.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd be curious to see
I
what
still.
like other people maybe have experienced. Have you ever heard or seen a story online that, reminds you of what happened to you that night? Maybe, and if people have any supporting details, they found footprints, anything like that?
For me, the really big piece of evidence that kind of I would begin to think it was a certain creature would have to be like a, what was that? I forgot what it was called, but there's like a myth, it's mythical creature that has like, oh goodness, I cannot remember it. But the best way that I could try to explain it would be something probably related to a skinwalker of some kind, just simply because of the fact that I've heard accounts of people saying like it makes really guttural noises. It, you know, it can make those very hoarse sounding screams. So that's the closest I could get to it. As for like evidence of it, I didn't see it. I was too busy running from the thing and just looking forward, trying not to get tripped over by something to really get a good glimpse at it. But definitely, I would say that it's, I wouldn't say that that's a normal animal. I hope that maybe in the future I will find something that will explain what it is so that I can better understand what I experienced.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I do know there was a movie. They'd call it. It was entitled the Missouri Monster, or and they nicknamed it the Momo Monster, which was, they had speculated that it was something close to like a Bigfoot, but much bigger almost, and large bipedal humanoid, but with like a very elongated head, and. Yeah, something kind of similar
Yeah, I've
happened.
heard of the Momo Monster.
Yeah, so that's, that's something that goes through my head when I hear your story, something like that. But I mean, it's just so, there's so many things out there that we don't know about. And, super interesting.
Like I said, it's just the only way, the only thing I could come up with is may it could have very well been something else, but the first thing that popped into my mind was a Wendigo of some kind, because I've heard stories about them. I've heard a couple of rumors from hunters and stuff, not around here, but on like the internet, and I've been to different states around, and I've heard stories from people that have said that that's the best way I can describe what the sound is. But like, it's really hard to go off based off of what the noise it makes, because I didn't actually get to see what it was. But I just wonder what my dog might have seen, because she obviously knew that something was there before I did. So I think about if maybe I had went down there and I didn't have my dog with me, if I wouldn't have been able to know it was there and escape.
Yeah, it's crazy that your dog just is back there with no apparent injuries. I mean, I really feel like your dog saved your life that day. I mean, I feel like it kept whatever it was at
Oh
bay,
yeah,
and
100%. Yeah. It's that dog, she sadly passed away when I was really young, but she was always a really good dog. She always hung out with me, and since I was like the only child that lived really in that area and at that house, she always wanted to play with me. So I think the fact that I had such a loving relationship with that dog and how that dog wanted to follow me everywhere saved my life. Like, that dog was willing to hold back whatever this was, fight it, alert me to it, whatever. And the fact that she decided to come with me to that trip when she could have very well just stayed home and sleep or, you know, do or whatever she wanted to do. It's the fact that she wanted to be with me that I really do feel like that is what saved me from, you know, whatever that was.
now, as an adult, do you think you'd ever go back there out that far again, maybe with a group of people, and more,
Oh, definitely with a group of people.
Yeah, I don't think I'd
Like,
ever.
I would go not want to go back
again.
There.
Yeah, it's terrifying. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Did the area ever develop since then? Has there been more homes that have been put out there?
So for this area, a lot of people own a lot of land. So a lot of the development wasn't exactly like building new homes. It was remodeling old buildings into homes. And, you know, I don't know if they might have saw anything while they were building it, but like remodeling new houses, doing whatever. But that creek area, I haven't, to my knowledge, nobody has built on that creek in a very long time. And in that area, the only thing that I know of that's man-made in that area is the occasional piece of trash that flows down the creek and a deer stand that's been abandoned for a very long time.
Yeah, well, that'd be interesting, you know. I wonder if what it was might still be out there then, or if it has more than just itself, or
I just want to know what it looks like, because if it can make a noise like that, I can only imagine how terrifying the thing actually looks.
Was it extremely loud, or was it close to you when it made the noise? Did it sound like it was distant, but just like a very deep rumble, or?
It was similar to, like, you know, a dog will kind of do a low growl. It sounded very close. Like, it sounded almost on the tree line, but it only made that noise when my dog started growling at it. So it was like a response to my dog being aggressive. It started getting aggressive. And it didn't sound like it followed me, and I heard it up in the tree line, and at certain points I'd hear it a little bit more distant, but I would hear whatever it was, you know, coming after me. So I'd get further away. Some parts of the creek, you know, bend into a almost like a U shape, so I'd have to go around, and it could kind of like cut across the tree line, you know. But it was definitely pretty fairly close to me, like within, you know, 100 feet of me.
Yeah, at any given point. That's incredible. Just I get so many images in my head when I get to do these, and I just listen, and it's just, I don't know, it's scary, you know, because I think about things that I've done as a child, being out in the woods by myself, and just, you know, I've never had anything like that. Definitely I've had encounters with animals or things that I've seen that I can't explain, whether it be just my lack of understanding of the animals in that area at the time, or you know, or just general things that are
Yeah,
unexplainable.
definitely.
But yeah, that's,
For
well, I
me,
mean,
it was an ex unexplainable in the sense that I've never heard an animal make that noise.
yeah, have you ever heard
Like
anything close to it since?
you know, probably like the same noise that a dog would make whenever it gags, or like they kind of make that noise,
Oh yeah, it's like
but
super,
constant.
super,
Like a
yeah,
really,
like
like
a
I said,
choking, like they had
it
smoke in
sounded
it.
like whatever it was had been smoking for like 90 years, like a extreme amount of time, to where it sounded like it had smoke in its mouth as it was growling, like kind of muffled, but just a really hoarse, almost painful sounding growl.
Yeah, it was like the corpse husband of dogs, like it was just super deep almost. That's, yeah, I mean, I've got a pretty
Yeah,
deep voice, and
definitely.
you know, so I can only imagine, like, amplified whenever I'm coughing, and it sounds pretty harsh, and you know,
Oh yeah.
that's crazy. All right, well, I guess
But it was like a perpetual coughing. It like sounded constant. Like it just breathing was constantly coughing for it.
okay, so it's like a wheeze, like it was just wheeze. Well, did it feel like a wheeze, or did it feel like its cough was like just like its natural kind of like its idle animation almost, or?
Kind of like the sound a zombie would make.
Oh
Like a
God,
zombie. Like
yeah.
it sounded like a zombie.
Like
Yeah, it
it's
was just like a
struggling,
constant.
every breath is a struggle. Yeah. God, that's just imagining that and you know, this huge open space.
Once again, another message from our sponsors.
And then, you know, wintertime, I'm sure that, you know, your lungs are already struggling with the cold air. And
What was funny was the fact that the hunters and stuff that talked about the wintertime had, like, around here, it's not very common for you to find people that hunt in the winter, because they say that it could be because of, like, seasonal changes, that, you know, people sometimes get seasonal depression or however it is. But I just found it weird how this happened in the fall. And I've had heard stories of people saying, like, oh, don't hunt in the fall or wintertime. You know, you feel this immense dread, or like almost an almost a sad feeling when you're in the woods hunting. And a lot of people, you know, they've been discouraged from hunting for that reason. They don't want to hunt during those times because they don't want to feel that feeling. And after this, I'm not going to hunt ever again. I'm not going to go out there by myself and maybe see the thing again.
Yeah. Well, I personally have never been hunting. The most hunting I do is for a good deal at Ross every now and then, but you know, that's as close as I get. And yeah, I mean, as an adult, I rarely go outside now, and I, you know, I hear all these stories, and I, you know, and I've become paranoid. But I feel like my fight or flight senses have increased, just with, like, just hearing things from things that happen in the city, like rural areas, like you explained. Because my family's all, they all live in like a small town in Texas, you know, one of those towns where everyone knows each other. But same, you know, acres of land in between properties, you know, just out there, and you make your own fun, essentially, you know, whether it be pulling tree branches and making little forts, or, you know, whatever you do to pass your time, or like making makeshift spears. We just, you know, but I was the youngest out of three brothers, so, you know, we always got into trouble. And you know, at least on my side, my mom knew something was up if she couldn't hear us. If we were quiet, she always knew something was going on. She's like, okay, what are you guys doing in there? But you know, or we just,
my grandma would just know by the way I walked. She had a sixth sense for that. But I very rarely got in trouble, except for that once. She scolded me pretty hard for that, and I'm sure it's for good reason. She probably knew something at the time I didn't. But she told me to never go that far again. And from that time on, like for about a year or so, I would go down to the creek with her. Like, she wouldn't let me go even to the bridge alone. We would have to go together. Then she started to lay off a little bit on it. And then now I don't go that far by choice.
Yeah, only if it's something like, I guess you have to do, or, you know, that makes sense. So. Yeah. Did you ever tell anybody at school about this story?
I did tell a couple of my close friends, and I, you know, I told my grandma, obviously. And a lot of them, they didn't want to believe me, because they were like, oh, you didn't see it, so it's obviously, you know, you could have just fabricated it. And I told them with, like I said to you, with the noise it was making, I don't want to know what it looked like. And on top of that, the fact that, you know, whenever I tell people the story, I always tell them it could have been an animal. It could very well have been like a diseased animal. It could have been something rabid. It could have been the crazy instance of my dog was chasing after it conveniently in the same direction that I was running. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that it could have been. I just can't find any sources that show me what it could have possibly been. But just any like solid sources, that is, you know, things that have multiple
details
that kind of line up with my story. And But if I did have the choice, I would want to try and capture it again, like try to find it, I mean, get a good look at it, get a description, you know, go online, find people that have had similar encounters, kind of correlate the story. But yeah, that's my take on it. I don't really want to see it again. But if I had the choice, I probably would from with like binoculars.
Yeah, or set up in like one of those cameras you put on the trees, and it captures the pictures of the
Yeah,
animals.
I'd
Well, that's
much rather that.
all right. Well, I appreciate your story and your time and everything, and it's been wildly fascinating. And personally, I want to look up into this and just see what I can find online now. It's super intriguing. Is there anything you want to tell the listeners? Maybe some. Some of the younger audience that might be listening in, and they live, in a rural area, and they explore, with a brother or sibling by themselves.
I would say if you're going with yourself, bring some kind of protection with you. Whether it be like if you're spiritual, you could bring spiritual protection. If you like more of a physical protection, you can bring a knife, you know, something to defend yourself, 'cause I was in a very vulnerable situation where I had nothing to defend myself besides the watch that was on my wrist. Like I don't know what I could have done with that, but that's all I had. And so I would recommend that. And then if you do have a dog, or you know, if you have, mostly it's a dog, try to bring them with you, because dogs can sense something that they can sense a lot of things that people can't. And that's really what I think saved me from whatever that was, because like I said, it didn't start growling until my dog started growling at it. So I kind of theorized that it was trying to either sneak up on me, or my dog growling at it provoked it enough to attack us. So, but the fact that my dog knew before I did was very crucial in my survival of that situation. And then the third thing is, tell someone where you're going to be. Don't randomly go into the woods without any explanation, because I hadn't told my grandma that I went into the woods that far down the creek. So if something would have happened to me, she wouldn't have known, you know, where to look, where to try to find if I had dyed my body or traces. I mean, she wouldn't have had no indication of where I was. So just tell somebody where you are whenever you go somewhere that is a place like that, you know, very secluded, or even going outside to go walk down the street, or just make sure somebody knows.
I think that's pretty well said. I support everything you said. That was really good advice. And all right, I guess we'll get on to more stories in the next episode. But thank you again, Autumn, so much for taking some time out of your day to share your story. I really appreciate it. And all
Thank
right.
you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really like the channel, and this is pretty big for me. So it's the first time I've really gotten involved in something this big, so it's definitely really fun for me.
Perfect. All right, I'm gonna, I guess I'll hit the stop button in T-minus 3, 2, 1. The world is filled with stories of strange and elusive creatures that defy explanation. These cryptids often lurking on the fringes of human knowledge, capturing our imaginations and inspire countless myths and legends. One such enigmatic being the Momo Monster, a creature said to roam the woods of Missouri. And after my conversation with Autumn, I decided to dig a little bit deeper into the lore surrounding the Momo Monster, examining its origins, alleged sightings, and the enduring fascination it holds for both believers and skeptics. The origins of the Momo Monster. While the Momo Monster is short for Missouri Monster, first entered the realm of popular folklore in the early 1970s, its origins can be traced back to the series of alleged sightings in and around the town of Louisiana, Missouri. In 1971, descriptions of the creature varied, but common attributes included a hairy ape-like appearance,
a foul odor, and a propensity for violence. The legend quickly spread and the Momo became a local sensation. One of the earliest sightings of Momo occurred July 1971, when two young boys claimed to have encountered the creature while playing in the woods. Their account described a large, hairy, and grotesque figure that terrified them. As news of the incident spread, more reports and sightings emerged, and soon, Momo became a sensation in the media. Alleged sightings and encounters. Throughout the 1970s, numerous reports of Momo sightings poured in from various parts of Missouri. Witnesses described encountering with a towering bipedal creature, covered in hair, and possessing an otherworldly appearance. Most disturbingly, many claimed that Momo was aggressive, displaying hostile behavior towards humans and animals alike. The accounts were often accompanied by unsettling details. Witness reports hearing eerie sounds, witnessing strange footprints, and discovering unusual claw marks on trees. The town of Louisiana was at the epicenter of these sightings, and as word spread, locals began to take precautions when venturing into the nearby woods. As with many cryptic legends, skepticism and specific inquiries soon followed the Momo monster sightings. Skeptics argued that the sightings could be attributed to a variety of factors, including misidentification of known animals, hoaxes, and the power of suggestion. Some suggested that Momo sightings could be linked to the widespread fear of unknown creatures prevalent in American culture. In the absence of concrete evidence, efforts to investigate Momo sightings yielded little. Despite this, the legend continues to captivate the imaginations of Missourians, and Momo remains a popular topic of discussion among cryptozoologists and enthusiasts of the unexplained. The legend of the Momo monster left an indelible mark on Missouri's cultural landscape. Momo has become a source of local pride, with businesses, festivals, and even a Momo statue commemorating the creature in Louisiana. The Momo monster serves as a reminder of the power of folklore and the enduring fascination humans have with the unknown. And in conclusion, the Momo monster, Missouri, born from a series of mysterious sightings in the 1970s, continues to captivate cryptid legend. Whether one believes in the existence of such creatures or views them as products of imagination, the legend of Momo demonstrates how folklore and storytelling can shape a community's identity and spark the human curiosity to explore the unexplained. As long as tales of strange creatures persist, so too were the allure of the Momo monster in the hearts and minds of those who call Missouri home. My investigation also brought me to what is known as the Boggy Creek Monster, or the Folk Monster, albeit located inside Arkansas. This creature has haunted the imaginations of those living in the remote swamplands of Folk, Arkansas. And if you'd sit with me for just a bit, I'd like to explore the legend of the Folk Monster, tracing its origins as well, reported encounters, and the enduring impact it's had on local culture and cryptid enthusiasts. The Folk Monster, also known as Southern Sasquatch, or the Boggy Creek Monster, found its way into public consciousness in the early 1970s. The legend emerged from the sparsely populated region surrounding the town of Folk, located in Miller County, Arkansas. Unlike the traditional Bigfoot, which is often associated with mountainous regions, the Folk Monster was described as a large, hairy, ape-like creature, haunting the murky swamps of southern Arkansas. The Folk Monster's fame can largely attribute to the documentary-style horror film, The Legend of Boggy Creek, which was released in 1972. Directed by Charles B. Pierce, the film was inspired by real-life sightings and reports of encounters with the creature. The movie would feature dramatic reenactments of these alleged instances, further fueling public fascination with the Folk Monster. Many of the reports encountered with the Folk Monster shared common characteristics. Witnesses described a towering, bipedal creature covered in hair, often exceeding 7 feet in height. It was said to have a foul, pungent odor that preceded its appearance. Eyewitness recounts unsettling instances of the creature peering into windows, terrorizing livestock, and leaving behind inexplainable footprints. These stories captivated both believers and skeptics alike, sparking many debates about the existence of such a creature in the American South. With as many cryptid legends, the Folk Monster's existence has been met with skepticism. Critics argue that sightings can be attributed to misidentifications of known animals, hoaxes, powers of suggestion. Additionally, the lack of concrete physical evidence, such as photographs or DNA samples, has fueled doubts about the creature's existence. Nonetheless, proponents of the folk monster remain steadfast in their belief. They argue that the remote and densely forested swamps of southern Arkansas provide ample hiding places for elusive creatures, making definitive proof difficult to obtain. The debates surrounding the folk monster continue to attract researchers and cryptozoologists seeking to unravel the mystery. The folk monster has left an endearing mark on the culture of southern Arkansas. The legend has become a source of local pride for tourism, much like the Momo monster, and the folk monster's annual events and festivals dedicated to the creature. Residents have embraced the legend, and it's become the integral part of the region's identity. After looking into both of these creatures, I'm still not sure if I know exactly what it was that Autumn had seen. I'd be interested in seeing what everyone else sees over on the Discord server. And with that being said, I just want to say thanks again, everybody, for listening. And if you made it this far, I'm sure you'd love to know where you can find more content. For more scary podcasts like this and a link to our Discord, where you can reach out to be interviewed to the show, please go to eeriecast.com. Thanks again, everyone. This is Eric signing off for the night. And I hope you guys have a good one. Stay safe. I really hope you're enjoying the show. I have a lot of fun being here. Honestly, it's amazing. I love it. I love being able to do this. So can't stress that enough. I look forward to it. Yeah. So please hit me up on the Discord. You can find me on there. And yeah. So I'll catch you guys later. All right. That's enough. Enough rambling. I'm sure you guys want to get to the next episode. Or not. Maybe there's not a next episode out yet. Who knows? Maybe there is. Possibly. I got a bunch of them recorded, so they're coming. Just got to edit a bunch of stuff, so. That's about it. Okay, that's enough. I'm rambling. I could talk for hours, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.